Good morning, everyone. We thank you for your patience. There is a chance we can actually wrap up the House work at this phase of the work on the entire DHS budget today, and so there are certainly items that have to be ironed out, if that's even a possibility. We'll begin today. This is the Thursday, June 23rd, 2005 session of the House Special Committee on Budget Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety. We're working today the work session on House Bill 5148, Seniors and People with Disabilities, the budget cluster, and so we'll open a work session on this portion of the bill. Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you noted, Mr. Chair, our intention here is to work our way through the Seniors and People with Disabilities budget cluster. We have distributed spreadsheets and the memo to you committee members yesterday. We'll walk through it as we have the last three budget clusters. And then we have one performance measure to talk about, performance measure number 15. We have one budget note that has been approved by Senator Schrader and Representative Scott that is on the memo, and then we'll take a short recess and move on in, if you wish, Mr. Chair, to finish up the entire DHS budget bill. With that, I turn right to the spreadsheet that has been distributed to you. It begins, as the others have, with the 2005-07 governor's recommended budget of $2.2 billion total funds. You'll see in this budget that this consists of general fund, other funds, federal funds. There are no tobacco tax or tobacco settlement or lottery funds in this budget cluster. The first two-plus pages are agency reshoot request issues. If you flip over to the third page, the top of the third page, you'll see that the total reshoot request that was submitted by the department for this cluster was a change, an increase of $91.7 million general fund, almost $85 million federal funds, a reduction of $5 million other funds, total funds increase on line 47, $171.6 million total funds. Then, in addition to those that request in the reshoot, the House leadership is suggesting an additional $36.1 million. That is on line 62 of general fund. Almost all of that is associated with add-backs of cuts that were in the governor's recommended budget. And with that, I'll return to the first page and quickly walk you through this reshoot request. On line 2, you'll see lines 2, 3, 4, 5 are all changes in caseload projections and cost per cases. You can see the nursing facility caseload and cost, an increase above the governor's budget, $10.4 million. General fund, community facilities caseload and cost, $6.9 million. Hourly home care worker program caseload and cost, $6.9 million general fund. Live-in home care worker program caseload and cost, $2.4 million general fund. There is on line 6 a correction of DD mandated developmental disability mandated services caseload changes that were included in the November 2004 rebalance and needed to be rolled forward in the governor's recommended budget. Other in-home care on line 7, these are caseload and cost per case changes, net changes of $142,000. On line 8,
Mr. Chair.
Representative, wasn't it?
Real fast, Mr. Britton, could you tell me what what is that number 7? I'm not going to ask each item, but it's some of the things I just.
Ancillary services, I've noted, are meals and in-home agency, among other things. Many of the in-home services are provided by client-employed providers, but we also use some in-home agencies, and they are included in this particular budget category noted as ancillary services.
Could you follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you. Mr. Britton, but you say meals. I mean, is it all for food? Is it all people, you know, additional staff or out?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, I'm not sure of that, but these are not all meals for sure. There is this is an assortment of services that are adjunct to some main Medicaid long-term care services to stabilize and make sure that the person is stable and in good condition. So it's a variety of different services. These are not staffing costs within the agency. Most all of these, by the way, unless you see some position changes, they are typically special payments to providers, nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, and in this case, in-home agencies.
Mr. Chair, if you'll give me one more follow-up and I'll quit. So do you assume that this is because they're charging more for their meals or services or whatever? Is that, or is it caseload? Is they up?
If you give me a second, I will look.
Would this also be Meals on Wheels?
Mr. Chair, no, it would not be Meals on Wheels. That's in the Older Americans Act, and that's federal funds. The description that I have says estimated cost per case increases and increase in caseloads for meals of 94 and in-home agency providers of 100 has increased slightly. So this is not a large program, but these are caseload increases primarily. Some cost per cases per
Thank
case
you.
Increases
Thank
as
you.
Well.
Somewhere along the line, would you address, and maybe we'll have to get some information on this, but I've been told that the Meals on Wheels cost is about $7 a meal, but it was not included in the reshoot, and that there's about $250,000 of underfunding because the state's only paying $5.28 a meal. I'm not sure why.
Mr. Chair and members, the Older Americans Act funding, which is distributed to all area agencies on aging, would be used for those meal costs. That's my understanding, and I'm looking to the agency for confirmation of that. And that's a capped amount of federal funds. So how they divide that up, it's probably on some allocation method, and the funding is capped. It's all federal funds.
There's
an increase in the cost of those services, then those funds would buy fewer services or fewer meals.
All right. Thank you.
On line 8 is a correction to nursing facility rates. Nursing facility rates, as you may be aware, are cost-based, and they are rebased every biennium during the first year of the biennium and then increased with a inflation factor during the second. This is a re-estimate based on later cost information that the agency has, and this is a correction according to reshoot of those nursing facility rates based on later cost information.
Question on this item. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that issue, the $6.9 million other funds, what's the source of those other funds?
That's a good question.
My belief, and again, I would look to the agency for some help here, is that those are provider taxes. Is that correct? Yes. I'm getting a nod. Line 9 is Real Choice Systems Grant, federal funds limitation increase. This is a federal grant that was approved, I believe, by the Emergency Board, and this is providing some increased limitation for the expenditure of those funds. Line 10 is the general fund backfill of an incorrect revenue projection. This is the Medicaid upper payment limit issue. Some limitation was left in and mistaken for revenue. And this we saw in the rebalance We included a budget note in House Bill 5077, the rebalance bill, that directed the agency to take a hard look at their other funds' revenue and expenditure limitation in the senior program and to report back to the emergency board about that review. Line 11, presumptive Medicaid disability determination team. This was an issue that was raised during the rebalance, although, as I recall, there was no additional funding. But presumptive Medicaid disability determination, the caseload for this issue has increased. We believe that it has something to do with the OHP standard caseload. When a person seeks eligibility for the Oregon Health Plan, given certain kinds of distinctions in eligibility, these people may be presumptively eligible. That is, they may be given eligibility for the Oregon Health Plan immediately if they have a significant disability and it appears that they will qualify for SSI. So there are 12 positions associated with this to deal with this increasing caseload.
President Hanson.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time to totally discuss this issue, but I would certainly like at some point to talk about this in relationship to the general assistance program, which we haven't funded. The department is suggesting there's 28 FTE positions connected with general assistance, and I'm thinking if we're working on presumptive medical disability determination with 12 people, that I can't see that there's that much more caseload increase in terms of doing general assistance at the same time. And so at some point during the discussion of this budget, I would certainly like to have an opportunity to talk about the general assistance program.
Maybe toward the end.
Okay. And Mr. Chair and members and Representative Hanson, there is an addition to the general assistance program a little bit later, but if the chair wants to, the agency can talk to you further about general assistance. Line 12 is a correction of a duplicative reduction to developmental disability children's intensive in-home supports. There was $1.4 million taken out as a result of the November rebalance, and then it was taken out yet again in the development of the governor's recommended budget. That was $1.4 million of this cost. The additional $400,000 here is associated with the fact that there were some costs that were omitted in the development of the governor's budget. So this fully funds, as I understand it, the projected children's intensive in-home support program for children with developmental disabilities.
Thank you.
The next one. This again is a correction in the governor's recommended budget. There was a reduction, or is a reduction, based on a 5% vacancy rate in these developmental disability services foster homes. The vacancy rate has proven to be too high. The actual rate is more like 3%, and this is a add back of some of that reduction. Line 14 is a correction of the federal match rate used in the governor's recommended budget, as well as a small increase, about $82,000 of other funds in developmental disability services local match. And this is a correction of the FMAP. In a moment, you're going to see a change in the FMAP rate, which will save money. That is based on new information, but this is a correction of the wrong FMAP used in the governor's recommended budget. Yesterday, we talked about the closure of the Oregon State Hospital Jarrow Psychiatric Ward. The estimated cost for doing that with respect to the seniors and people with disability services was $3.8 million general fund, and that is on line 15. You'll see in a moment, because that OSH ward is not being closed, you'll see the removal of this $3.8 million down on line 44. 16 is the senior impact of removing Oregon Health Plan adult dental. They believe that they will have additional costs if adult dental is eliminated. As you are aware, yesterday you added back $7 million, and this particular issue will also be removed. The agency indicated that if at least emergency dental were added back, that this cost would be avoided. And that will be one of my recommended adjustments down below on the spreadsheet.
Oh, okay.
One of the issues that we have talked about during this session has been the effect of the Medicare Modernization Act. And lines 17, 18, and 19 all deal with this particular issue. The first, on line 17, is to add additional eligibility workers who will be able to deal, we hope, with the low-income subsidy issue for Part D. That is, we anticipate that a fair number of persons will be seeking a low-income subsidy under the Medicare Modernization Act. They have to be found eligible, and this is a ramping up of 29 limited-duration positions, 8.68 FTE, to do that particular work. On line 18, this is a rebalance. This was in the rebalance of an issue to add some four temporary workers to staff toll-free phones to respond to questions about the Medicare Modernization Act. This is a rolling forward of those temporary positions, four positions, 1.32 FTE. Line 19 is ongoing staffing needs to handle estimated woodwork effect of MMA. And by that, what is being contemplated here is the fact that when people come in to Area Agency on Aging offices or state offices for seniors and people with disabilities, that seeking information about the Medicare Modernization Act, that there may be some fairly significant spillover onto other caseloads when they learn about the services that the department has, such as food stamps or the Oregon Health Plan or long-term care.
Why would there be a reduction in other funds?
This is the second sentence as I read what I've written here. Also, backfilling fewer projected estate recoveries related to the clawback. And let me explain that. That's important because it relates to another bill that we may be considering down the road a bit. Today, the department makes recoveries on persons' estates who have in the past received long-term care services as well as the Oregon Health Plan benefits. And the issue is this, that right now those recoveries on Oregon Health Plan benefits are higher than what would be recovered of a clawback payment. A clawback payment being a payment made on behalf of a person for Medicare Part D to the federal government. So right now there was an amendment to House Bill 3108 that would allow the state to do that. It's the Attorney General's opinion right now that the state does not have the authority to seek state recoveries on clawback payments because they're not Medicaid, they're Medicare payments that the state makes to the federal government. And in order to be able to collect on those clawback payments, there needs to be a change in law. That's not in this particular bill.
But the difference between the recovery on OHP benefits and the recovery on the clawback is this loss of other funds, right? Of the $844,000 in recoveries. Okay. So within the $2.8 million, Mr. Chair, for general fund, there is the backfilling of that $844,000 of lost recoveries. Line 20, disabled adult children offset income ruled wrong by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, despite a Oregon Department of Justice opinion to the contrary. This was a practice that still is in effect for some persons with developmental disabilities to collect on that person's income in order to offset some of the service costs. CMS ruled that this was contrary to law and has insisted that those income offsets be repaid, and that's what this cost is.
Are we appealing it?
I don't know the answer to that question, Mr. Chair. Do you want the department to
save it?
Okay.
Talk to
another people. Line 21 is the addition of Elder Place, Providence Elder Place rate increase. This was a rate increase that was approved by the November at the November Emergency Board in the department's rebalance. This roll-up of costs was not added to the governor's budget, and it is being added here, $761,000 general fund and associated federal match.
Mr. Chair.
Councilor Busnett.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I've had some conversation and concern about this this issue, and what I think I'll do, I'll write to the Department of Human Services and be sure that during the quarter of the budget note that they look into how we're funding this Elder Place, and is that, are we overfunding or whatever, so I'll be sure that it's looked at. I was briefed that there's some concern about the cost of that versus in-home services, and about half of what we're paying per person in there, so just to let the chair know and the staff that I'll just write a letter to the Department of Human Services, be sure that they look in the review per this budget note that they consider that or look at that.
Great, sounds good.
Just a point of clarification, Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett. The budget, we'll talk about the budget note, but the budget note, as I recall, pertains to developmental disabilities and children's
would not cover that.
Pardon me?
So it wouldn't cover that?
It wouldn't cover this, but you obviously can write a letter to the department and ask them to look at that particular issue. It doesn't have to be included as part of this budget note.
Thank you.
Line 22 is a correction of the Oregon Supplemental Income Program caseload roll-up. Again, this is a November Emergency Board rebalance issue. Line 23 is a correction of the Oregon Project Independence reduction. As you'll recall, this program was overcut. That is, there was about $8.9 million general fund in the current service level. It was reduced by $11.1 million. This particular correction proposed in the reshoot gets this back up to a maintenance of effort level for the Older Americans Act. And down below, you'll see an additional add-back to that program as well.
Where is that, Mr. Chair?
It will be on line 56, Representative. This is the portion that was included in the agency's reshoot. The rest is an additional add that the House is making. Line 24 corrects an error of too much federal funds limitation. Line 25 is an add-back for 3 months of general assistance. The governor's recommended budget made a reduction of all 24 months, or assumed 24-month savings, and as I said, this assumes that 3 months are added back at a cost of about $800,000 general fund. It also would add 28 positions and 3.5 FTE.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hanson.
Mm-hmm. Without going into the total discussion on this issue, you know, it concerns me that a program that only serves less than 1,000 has a caseload of less than 1,000 people. Now, these are the most destitute Oregonians that we work with. That somehow by eliminating the general assistance portion, which is just the bridge financing that covers them from the time that they apply for SSI or federal disability benefits until they start to receive their federal stipend, that managing just this bridge program for less than 1,000 clients is going to take 28 additional caseworkers, especially when we've already built in 12 caseworkers just to handle their presumed eligibility on the Medicare costs. And this, like I say, it's an incredibly important program in terms of those 1,000 people, because it is the most destitute of Oregonians. It's people that come seek service when they're in crisis, too sick or ill or frail to work and care for themselves. And this short period of bridge financing seems to me to be invaluable in terms of helping to stabilize them. They're presumed eligible for Medicaid, so we're covering their medical costs, but if their housing and other needs, if those can't be met, the potential of dramatically increasing the medical costs. Anyway, I'm starting to, as we track the various elements of this through the budget, I think it's something that still isn't making sense to me, not just the fact that we don't have the money necessarily to fill the program, but I think we're seeing some very inflated costs if we want to to maintain the program. And I don't understand that. And hopefully before we're finished, we can get some answers.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanson, would it be appropriate for the agency to respond directly to you?
Well, I would hope they could respond publicly to the whole committee before we're done with this bill, or before we take action on this.
The public phases are done, and we're now at a work session, mm-hmm. and we've got two co-chairs and a governor who have made a determination as to how this is handled, and so to now essentially open up a public hearing on this issue.
Well, I'm not talking about a public hearing. I'm talking about clarification of the numbers that have been presented to us.
You're saying that you think that these numbers may not be correct?
Right. And if those numbers aren't correct, and yet those are the numbers that the governor and two co-chairs have based their opinions on, then I think we probably still need to discuss them. And we can certainly do it informally, and we can do it without a public hearing. But if these are incorrect numbers, I would expect that the co-chairs would want to realize that.
That is a reasonable request. At the end of this phase of the presentation, we will ask the agency to come forward and address these numbers, but not the overall program, because that decision is for another place.
Line 26 is a correction of personal care reduction in the governor's recommended budget. $1.9 million general fund. Line 27, employment initiative. Again, the governor's recommended budget assumed 24 months savings. This assumes that 3 months are added back. Line 28, let me read you the information that was given to me on this one. This has to do with the agency with choice option within the governor's budget. It cut $9.1 million general fund, and this is being added back. And I'd like to read the description to you on this one. The governor's recommended budget assumed all 12,000 home care workers would be shifted to agency with choice administrative structures by January 2006, which assumed projected savings in DHS staffing costs and slightly decreased workers' compensation and unemployment insurance costs. After follow-up research by DAS Labor Relations and the Attorney General, it has been determined that new worker qualifications and pre-employment screening is a mandatory bargaining right for existing workers. Therefore, the agency with choice model could only apply to new home care workers and as such must be phased in over several years, thereby reducing 05-07 savings. So this is an add back of that entire reduction in the governor's budget. I would note, Mr. Chair and members, that the co-chairs in their initial budgets back released back in early May did add this particular issue back. However, they are reducing the special purpose appropriation to the emergency fund, which was $20 million in the governor's recommended budget. They are reducing that by $10 million. So that you don't see that in this particular bill, but you may see it ultimately in the emergency board bill. Okay. Line 29.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Britton, if the original governor's recommended budget was the $9.1 million and the program's still moving forward, though there may not be the entire savings, why is the entire amount being added back? I mean, we're implementing the program, correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, yes. My belief on that is that it could be part of a new negotiated agreement with the union on this particular issue, but for now, they are assuming no particular savings on by doing that. And that agreement has not been reached, to my knowledge, at this particular point.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
President
Hanna. I'm just kind of thinking in my head, if we implement this program and there is some turnover rate among home care workers, which there certainly is some turnover rate, and the new group is under the agency of choice program and there truly are savings.
Well, you just got the point. And there truly are savings. When we have the agency up here, we can ask them what the basis would be to assume that there would be any savings, because apparently, by putting the whole number back, the assumption is that there's going to be no savings. And so maybe we,
to the point.
We need to get that answer. So we'll add that to the list. Thank you.
On line 29 is a repricing of the reduction in the governor's budget that eliminated the relative adult foster care. This has been repriced, and the projected savings are $13.2 million general fund less than they were in the governor's budget. You'll see again down below the remaining add back for this particular issue. Relative adult foster care is being restored in this budget, and you'll see that down below in one of the House adjustments. Likewise, there was a repricing of the adults and persons with disabilities home and community-based care services waiver cap. The total savings in the governor's budget was about $7.6 million general fund. This adds back $5.5 based on caseload changes, and you'll see that this is also being added back in the House budget down below completely.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Hanna.
Mr. Britton, you got just a touch ahead of me. Back to line 29, the repricing of relative adult foster care. Could you give us a little more explanation of that piece as it relates to line 58, the additional add back. I want to understand how those
yes.
two.
Line 58, if you add line 58 and line 29,
mm-hmm.
you would have the full restoration of that particular program.
Thank you.
The the $13.2 million was included in the reshoot, saying that they are correcting an error in the pricing of that. They were not able to get all the savings or did not believe that there would be as much savings as was assumed in the governor's recommended budget.
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Can I understand the timing of the repricing of the reshoot of the $13 million to that program came after the House restored the $10 million to the program?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, I can't necessarily say that that is the case. The agency was working on its reshoot when the co-chairs' budgets were released in early May. So they may have had that information, but my understanding is that they took a look at this reduction and said, we don't believe we can get $23 million. We believe we can get $10 million from this savings. The reshoot does not reflect a policy change in the governor's budget. It reflects simply a repricing or a correction of how much savings they anticipated from eliminating relative adult foster care. And I think part of the issue here is that if relative adult foster care were eliminated, that these people could very well end up in the in-home care program or other long-term care services.
Thank you. Follow-up once more.
President Hanna.
I just want to make sure I've got the math right. The governor's budget was eliminating $23, $24 million, correct?
Yes.
So we're adding the 13 and the 10 here. We're getting it back.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. It's a little confusing because of the way it's in here.
It's the same issue, members, on line 30, which is the repricing of the waiver cap, and on line 59. That represents the total add back of the cut that was in the governor's budget. Moving on to line 31, this is a reshoot of the services or the developmental disability mandated caseload and cost per case. Line 32 completes a transfer of area agency on state positions to area agency on aging, as well as FTE. Line 33 is to use supplemental security income recoveries from general assistance. Again, this assumes that general assistance is closed, and there will be some residual recoveries from that program coming in that would be directed to fill a hole in the Oregon Supplemental Income Program. You see on line 34, lower caseloads in spousal pay and independent choices, the Independent Choices Waiver Program. 35 is a reprojection of the personal care caseload. Line 36 is a reshoot of the Oregon Supplemental Insurance or Income Program. Cost per case is lower than what was in the governor's recommended budget, producing some savings. There were some unanticipated settlement recoveries in the DD, in the system for developmental disabled persons, $6.8 million general fund savings, some excess other funds limitation is being removed on line 38, $1.3 million, a reshoot of the adults and persons with disability staffing results in some savings, some general fund savings. On a reduction of positions, 31 positions, 36.3 FTE.
Does that have anything to do with the staffing study?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if it has anything directly to do with the staffing study. I don't believe that the caseload or the ratio of staff to caseload has been changed to produce these savings. I don't believe that's that's the case.
Part of the staffing study showed that there was people in one category and not enough in another. It's going to be a shift. So I don't know if these are terminations or a transfer.
Line 40, additional. This was a reduction in the governor's budget, and this is a little bit more reduction associated with the Developmental Disability Housing Fund. These are savings that were being used for debt repayment, and the debt has, as I understand it, was repaid earlier. Line 41 is a federal match rate change using new federal information. We saw this within the health services cluster yesterday. This is the portion associated with the seniors and people with disabilities cluster. You can see further federal match rate changes on lines 42 for the Eastern Oregon Training Center and on line 43 for the state-operated community program. Earlier, I pointed out the cost of closing the Oregon State Hospital Gero psychiatric wards. There was an additional cost above of 3.8. This removes that cost because we're not closing the geriatric Gero psychiatric wards.
So the cost was going to be in closure. Same people there as before.
Right, Mr. Chair, in the health services cluster, there was a $3 million general fund savings. Those same people, if they were moved into the senior program, apparently would cost $3.8 million. So, as you'll recall yesterday, that reduction in the governor's budget of $3 million and the closure of the Gero psychiatric ward was reversed in their reshoot. So this $3.8 million is not a cost that will be incurred by the seniors system.
It's neutral.
Yes. And it's up above, Mr. Chair.
Line 15.
Line 15. Thank you. Finally, there was a small amount of savings on line 45 associated with the reshoot of a reduction in the governor's recommended budget that restructured assisted living facility and adult foster home rates. This is a small amount, a small change relative to the size of the reduction. And you'll see again down below on line 57 that those rates will be kept status quo in the House budget. Okay. Finally, there were some technical adjustments. Again, they net to zero agency-wide, and those are included on line 46 for the seniors. Portion of the budget.
Okay, why don't we, well, first, are there questions for Mr. Britton? And if not, then what I'd like to do would be to invite the agency to come up and address a few of the questions that have arisen during this presentation. Representative Lesnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Britton, I'm still having trouble with the OPI, just trying, because I don't know how much money, you know, we started with or where it is in the budgets. Can you tell me? The governor recommended eliminating OPI, and the both chairs originally put $11.1 million back in.
At that time, there was only eight and a half in there when they recommended taking out 11.1, which...
Oh, he didn't eliminate the comment. So there was eight. When he eliminated the 11, there was eight left.
No. Mr. Chair and members... In the current service level budget, there was, let's use round numbers, there was $9 million for OPI. The governor's budget removed $11 million. So we were at a negative $2 million for OPI.
My checkbook. Okay, thank you.
That threw things off.
So in the reshoot portion of the budget, back on line 23, the budget or the department is proposing to add back
6 million. Actually, it's 6.2. These are rounded numbers.
4 million.
And the budget for the House will, in a moment, we'll talk about this on line 56, add an additional 10 to get to an OPI funding level of 14.
So that's more than they had, more than an essential level. That's an enhanced or...
That's correct.
Thank you. I think I understand. Sorry.
Representative Boone.
And is that because there's an increased number of people who could benefit from this? And it would be the difference between them going into a facility?
I could answer that probably.
Yeah,
because it was a policy decision more than a financial decision. And the policy decision was to enhance this program because it is low cost and helps people stay in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, at this time, a review going on as to the numbers of people. And there was also a request that it be expanded to also apply mm-hmm. to people with disabilities and not merely to...
You're reading my mind.
Yes, I'm kind of shortcut.
Okay.
And so those considerations are, mm-hmm. are all being looked at. And it ain't over till it's over.
And just to follow up, you're right on track. I didn't even have to talk. Does that mean, like the old married couple, they finish each other's sentences?
We've been together for months.
Yeah, 2 months now. Okay, let's not go there. But so that being said, and I appreciate that because that was my next question, is how does that figure in with disabled population? Thank you.
Could we have representatives from the agency who have a strong heart and large in knowledge?
What did you say? Mr. What are you talking about?
Because of all the things that we want to get through today, what I'm going to do is I'd like to ask questions and get some real direct answers, and then if it's not enough, we can expand. But I don't want to have us go into a large hearing on these issues. So I've got a few questions, and then we'll open it up. First is on line 4. We're talking about 4 phone staff members for MMA. And one of the points that has been brought up is that the staff for the state is only answering questions on the Medicaid Modernization Act prescription transfer, just for those of you that don't want to speak in the shorthand. There's a lot of questions about how this affects seniors and how there's going to be this transition made. And what I was told is that if they're not dual eligible, meaning eligible for Medicaid and for Medicare, then they're just being referred to an 800 number for the federal government and they're not getting their questions answered. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, James Hayes from the Department of Human Services. That's basically correct. The primary emphasis we have focused on are the dual eligibles because of their vulnerability and many of them being in long-term care. On the low-income subsidy portion of this whole program, we're taking sort of a minimal compliance approach in which we will direct people as much as possible to the Social Security Administration. We are now finishing hiring, so these people are just coming on staff now that will man toll-free lines in our office. They'll answer as many questions and be as helpful as they possibly can, but primarily they will redirect people back to Social Security offices. That's correct for the low-income subsidy portion of that, while we focus on the 50,000 or so dual eligibles with all the big changes coming this fall.
Okay, when's the first D-Board?
Mr. Chair, the meetings haven't been set. Typically, they are in September or November.
Okay. What I would request is, you covered it with your sentence when you said they will answer all the questions that they can, but it is the plan that they may have to make a referral. We have telephone technicians. What I would hope is that if they are not swamped, that they will answer questions, but if there is an overload, then they will implement the referral basis and not merely have a rule that if you're not dual eligible, you get referred to an 800 number. In other words, they're getting paid to answer questions for the elderly, and if the phone lines are not lit up, then I would hope that they would answer the questions of whoever call in, since they're there, they got the unit on, and they've got the knowledge. Is that a reasonable request?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's a reasonable request. I mean, we will do everything we can to answer people's questions, but again, we'll have very, and I'm focusing just on the low-income subsidy portion because the duals is a whole different issue. We have a very expansive amount of responsibility for that group, but for just the low-income subsidies who are not the duals, that's correct.
Okay, great. And also, as you go through this, there has to be adjustments because we haven't done this before, and so it may be that you're, since we're serving the people, that the phone technicians could say, you know, I can't answer that right now, but if you were to call at 8 o'clock in the morning, we're really quiet then, or to say, if you call the 800 number and you don't get a good response, call us back between 8 and 8:30 in the mornings because we usually have some extra time then so that people could feel like they're not just getting handed off. Okay? That mean reasonable?
And, Mr. Chairman, we can report back on this because, again, we don't know exactly what's going to come in the door on this either. So.
And if there's a problem, then we've got an e-board, and we will try and help as a legislature to help make this transition as easy as possible. So if you see that there are problems that aren't being met, then we'd sure hope you'd let us know. Second is line 20, appeals of CMS ruling. We have the line says, disabled adult and children offset income ruled wrong by CMS despite DOJ opinion to the contrary. Is CMS right, and therefore we're just adjusting this with $1 million, or are we proceeding because we think CMS is wrong, and so we want to show them wrong? I mean, is there an appeal process?
Mr. Chairman, we believe CMS is right, and our interpretation originally was wrong.
Okay. Good. Line 25. It says, general assistance. GRB assumes 24-month savings. This assumes that 3 months were added back. This figure of $792,253 for 3 months, if you would just do the math, would be $6.3 million if we had the program for the full 24 months. If it can be looked at that way, Representative Hansen has concerns about how we came up with the figure of $792 and whether or not it's accurate. And so, can you respond to that? And then, Representative Hansen, if you have some specific questions.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to let Kathy Cooper talk in more detail to that, but I just wanted to clarify, we're not adding 28 positions in here to operate this limited program for a short period of time. We're keeping the existing positions, and if you look at the far right column, it's 3.5 FTE because it's just continuing the program for 3 months. So it's not an addition of positions back. Okay. Kathy?
For the record, my name is Kathy Cooper. The answer to the question I think posed was on the general assistance. I believe that when we look at this general fund pays for both the cash assistance, which is the $314 a month for an individual. I believe it's $682 for a couple. It also pays for a limited number of people who need long-term care services. So we have a limited number of our general assistance clients that are also in either an in-home or in one of our facilities at this time. So that's what that dollar adds up to. It also pays for the staff that are called disability analysts that do the SSI recoveries. So our GA clients sign an agreement with us that they will apply for and seek SSI services. When they are found eligible for Social Security services, we then do a recovery of that of the GA costs out of the recoveries there. So we have staff that do that GA recovery.
Does that answer your question?
Well, it does. It still doesn't make a great deal of sense, though. To serve 950 people a year, or I'm assuming it's for a biennium, you're saying that requires 28 staff positions to do that. Considering that, and I know there would be work involved with the recoveries, but there's also work involved in terms of those people that are applying for SSI anyway. There's presumed eligibility for the Oregon Health Plan anyway. Very probably, unless they're in in-home care, in foster care or a nursing home, they'd be eligible for food stamps, and that takes casework. whether there's a general assistance program or not. So I'm wondering where the savings of 28 people come from if general services disappears. The other one is the other thing I don't understand is we've got 3 months, a cost of about $800,000 to keep this program going for 3 months. Then, in another place in the budget, we're using approximately $600,000 in recovered dollars to supplement the OSIP. Okay, so if that was being used, was coming back into the general assistance program, would our net cost only be $200,000 to keep it going? That there's like a reverse float that. That there's always going to be some reimbursement money as long as the program keeps going, then there will be reimbursement money at some point in the future.
Representative Hanson, I think you're correct. I mean, if we weren't shifting it as an offset to the OSIP program and we were continuing the program next biennium, yes, absolutely, that would be available. And the costs have always been calculated on the rate of recoveries from SSI. We transferred those recoveries now into the OSIP program on the basis that the program was going to close.
Mm-hmm. So is that ratio one that could be carried forward for the biennium, basically $3 spent and $2 returned?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the exact calculation, but I know in repricing what GA would cost if we continue it at next biennium, then we backed it out of where we put it in the OSIP program and then put it back into the ratio of recoveries versus general fund dollars needed to continue the program for the biennium.
Okay.
So I think the answer is yes.
All right, thank you. Question?
Well, okay, so the two questions are, you're saying that the dollars that are budgeted for general assistance go for the cash advances before they become eligible for SSI.
Correct.
And then some of that we're reimbursed for. And the staffing. And then I've asked the question of, because of all the other programs and services these people need, is it realistic to assume that there would be that dramatic of a decrease in staffing, 28 positions? So the question, you know, what's your staffing? Is your staffing requirement number realistic, and is your cash number realistic?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I think that what we're trying to do on line 25 here is only restoring the program as it exists for a 3-month period. And so it really is only restoring the actual staff that will be working on this program from July to September 30th. This is not trying to make a change to the program or to have this program go beyond September 30th.
Okay, let me follow up on his question then. Does it take 28 people when you consider the fact that these folks also have other involvement in the system where there's going to be other employees that are handling that involvement? Is it realistic to say that for this population it's 28 additional people to run this, because that runs the cost up? And if we consolidate and work utilizing other caseworkers who are meeting with the same people anyway for other ways, would that lower the cost in a way that ultimately where he's getting at with that and the recovery, maybe they financially this isn't a good cut. I mean, that's really where it's going. So what's the justification for 28 positions separately related just to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I understand the question. And we do have staffing standards, and in those staffing standards, it does look at whether a person is applying for eligibility in multiple programs. And we have looked at costing the GA program for this biennium for 05-07. We believe we could reduce this about 9 positions in the area of the staff that do the recovery and some of the eligibility if this program was going to go forward.
Okay. Thank you for that additional information. Line 28, let me make that. I want to write down about 9 position savings possibility. Good. got it. Line 28 deals with the agency of choice. This is Representative Hannah's question as to why would there be a full add back. In other words, if the governor says, let's put in a line of a new level here that will do management and we will save $9 million. And now all $9 million are being put back in and we're told it's going to phase in. And if it's going to be phased in over a period of time, then shouldn't there be some savings for maybe the 23rd month or the 22nd month of a biennium instead of putting back a full amount as if there will be no savings for a full biennium?
Mr. Chairman, there's a couple. I'll be very brief here. We're basically on parallel tracks. We have a work group, and we're looking at the agency with choice model, and we'll be costing that out and putting together a full implementation plan. At the same time, we're working with the union and our partners on parallel strategies, a training program, and other kinds of things that we hope will significantly mitigate, particularly the workers' comp issue. So those other discussions are going on as well. Plus, we've seen some dip in the workers' comp claims for the last quarter, which is good news. The dilemma for us in looking at projected savings and agency with choice, assuming these other strategies do not work, is, first of all, it could only apply if we were going to use new screening criteria, new minimum qualifications. It can only apply to new workers. So it would have to be a gradual phase-in. Plus, under the collective bargaining agreement, a person remains as part of the collective bargaining unit for even a full year, even if they're not working directly with a client. So by the time we have an implementation plan ready to go, which is probably about a year from now, plus then we look at an entire phase in, we don't think we'd get the savings this biennium. The issue is long-term dealing with workers' comp, and, of course, the cost that comes through the tail and all of that are the issues that we're focusing on. But, again, we're looking at multiple strategies.
I'm with you. So the answer is it's indeterminate, but if there are savings, then, boy, when we do the rebalance at the end of the next biennium, we'll use that money to fill other holes.
Correct.
Is that correct? Are there follow-up questions you have?
Right.
Line 39, it says, reshoot of APD staffing results in savings, and we show a reduction of 31 positions and 36.3 FTE. And so first question is, if we have 36.3 FTE, then how are we only reducing 31 positions here? And unless somebody's really working hard, or... And secondly, is the staffing study, is this a transfer? Are these people being laid off, or is there another place where they're going?
Mr. Chairman, this is not related to the staffing study. This is almost directly related to the trending down of the caseload, the decline in the caseload for the senior disability program overall. The 31 and the 36 issue, I'm not even sure I can answer that.
All right, if you roll that one up, it's $9.5 million.
You just eliminate positions during the planning.
You want to answer that?
thank you, Mr. Chair. The response is that the FTE is where we begin the biennium, but we start a gradual reduction of the workforce, and that's where it comes to the 31 positions. And so they're not all laid off at the very beginning of the biennium.
Usually when you have a position that isn't going to last for the full 24 months, then you have a reduction in your FTE. If they're going to last only half the time, it would be one position but a 0.5 FTE, and you're saying that there's going to be a reduction in FTE or in positions, and therefore that justifies having more FTEs than the positions. Well, Mr. Benton, maybe you can...
Yeah, I think what Ms. Cooper is trying to say is that some of the positions may be retained, but there is an FTE. That is, halfway through the biennium, the position still exists on the system. So the position wouldn't go, but if the person were to leave halfway through, that would be a reduction in FTE. The reduction here is the FTE reduction is higher than the position reduction. So the positions, for example, if there were seven additional positions, they still are retained on the system, but the FTE associated with those positions goes away if those positions are vacated. That's what these savings are. So, in other words, instead of 31, for example, we might have had more positions if they had left at the beginning of the biennium, like on July 1st, if those positions were vacant and no one was in them, they would be gone. But they're not. They're going to be filled for some portion of the biennium and leave halfway full or so.
Okay. I'll work on that one.
Okay.
46, this is the last question. Various technical adjustments, and it results in 36 new position, 35.07 FTE. And I'm wondering if we can get an answer as to if these are technical adjustments, why are we adding 35 FTE?
Mr. Chairman, I'm being told it's transfers between clusters, but I can't give you the detail on that.
Okay, well, Mr. Britton might know.
Mr. Chair, the position management unit will have position FTE and dollar changes between clusters. So this is movement of some positions between clusters.
Okay, so another cluster has got a decrease there.
That's correct.
Okay. Are there other questions for this panel? Representative Hammond.
Mr. Chair, I'll make this brief, and it's just a look back at general assistance. Back in our Phase 2, Phase 3 earlier discussions, those issues that we discussed, from my recollection, and again, this goes back some time, but you know, we were looking at about $5 million in reduction based on the early numbers that were provided in our spreadsheet. Now, if you take the new number that's being provided for the 3 months and annualize it, it's $9.5 million. And, I mean, I'm looking back at the old sheets and finding a $4.9 million reduction. But if you annualize the new stuff, it's $9.5 million. There has to be a point in time where this general assistance piece, we understand what the caseload differences are that got us from one point to the other. And again, this has been some distance in between. I know not everybody's familiar with it, but I'm looking back at the number, and I don't find a way to reconcile.
If I took 792653 and multiplied by 8, wouldn't that get us the biennial number? And I come up with six.
In theory, that's
6,341,000. Yes. So I'm not sure we got the 9.
You're going to for the biennium.
I took the quarter and this multiplied it by 8.
Okay.
And that gave me 6.3 million.
Okay.
So
6349.
Closer.
That's closer.
Okay.
I think there's a difference there. At some point, we need to reconcile that. Not
okay.
This moment, but it's an issue.
Okay, Representative Boone.
On line 32, the it says transfer of AAA positions and FTE moved to new AAA. There's 78. I'm just wondering how many staff do they lose and SPD? How does that work?
Mr. Chair and Representative Boone, what's going on here is the completion of transferring state employees to the new AAA employees, converting them into new employees for the AAA.
So
the state, the positions on here are state employees. They do not include Area Agency on Aging staff. However, the costs are incorporated in this budget.
Okay. Can we move on, everyone? If that's all right, we've got enough questions answered, then thank you very much for working with us on that and for these brief answers.
Mr. Chair, I'll continue fairly quickly because we've already talked about most of these. You can see on lines 49 and 50 the PERS rate reduction and the Attorney General rate reduction. Line 51, a 3% reduction to services and supplies and capital outlay. Line 52 is a decision on the part of the co-chair to eliminate Package 105 Adult Protective Services. However, on line 53, we're proposing to add back Package 105 using other funds revenue from Senate Bill 510, and we would request the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the expenditure limitation pending passage of the bill.
Okay.
Line 54 is part of Package 110, Medicare Modernization and I understand these to be program managers. The co-chair budget eliminates that particular part of Package 110, three positions, three FTE. Line 55, add back of the retired senior volunteer program of $250,000, general fund. Line 56 is the OPI addition to get to a total OPI budget of $14 million. Line 57 is to fill or to reverse a reduction in the governor's recommended budget, as well as the small reshoot savings on line 45 that would keep the adult foster home and assisted living facility rates at the at their status quo. Line 58 is the, we've talked about this one as well. This is the remaining portion of the governor's recommended budget elimination of the relative adult foster care, $9.9 million. Line 59, likewise, is an add back of the governor's recommended budget reduction for the waiver cap for the adults and persons with disabilities. Line 60 is an adjustment to add in the Oregon Disabilities Commission. And again, we would request DAS to unschedule the additional other funds limitation pending passage of House Bill 3230. This would add five positions, four FTE, and this is what's coming out with respect to the Oregon Disabilities Commission. And finally, as I noted earlier, there was an additional cost in the reshoot if adult dental or emergency adult dental were not added back. In fact, the House proposal is to add at least emergency dental back and a little bit more, so that cost would not be incurred by the seniors and people with disabilities cluster. The total other recommended adjustments aside from the reshoot, $36.1 million general fund, total preliminary budget, $856,535,772 million general fund, $148,206,319 other funds, $1,462,479,111 federal funds expenditure limitation, total funds $2.5 billion. 2,070 positions, 1,939.58 FTE. And you can see the change, net change from the governor's recommended budget on line 64.
Thank you, Mr. Britton. Are there additional comments or questions on the presentation thus far? Let's go to performance measure 15.
Performance measurement 15. Let me get to it. The percentage of seniors and adults with disabilities who are re-abused within 12 months of first substantiated abuse. The data that we have is only for persons with disabilities. My understanding is that the department is attempting to collect data with respect to seniors, but right now the data that we have is for persons with disabilities only. The actual result in 2003 was 6%, and that is the target, has been established as the target for 2006 and 2007. Wanted to know if you wanted to discuss that particular measure or consider changing the target.
Okay, comments? Your recommendation?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I don't have a recommendation on this particular performance measure.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanna.
I'll be brief about this, but just goes to my point again. The goal here is zero.
That's true. The targets for 06 are through 6. This is equal to the actual percentages.
Yes.
Can we take a look?
This is the actual result, Mr. Chair, and this is the target.
All right. If we could ask the agency to respond on if
the target for 05, 06, and 07 is 6, and we're already at 6, then what would be a reasonable target that we should be working toward, since if you've already since perfection is probably still not accomplished, and yet we're at the target, then maybe we ought to strive for a better rate. And so we can throw out a number, but we'd like it to be responsive to what have some input from the agency. I mean, should we be shooting it for 5%, or is 4% something that could be achieved in the next year or two?
Mr. Chairman, James Tate from the Department of Human Services. I think we talked briefly to our staff. Our recommendation, and let me back up. I mean, the goal is zero, and the policy is zero tolerance. I mean, absolutely. And I mean, we could benchmark it at zero and then just see how close we get over time. But whether that's realistic in the next couple of years, we don't think so. So I think we'd be comfortable dropping that to about 5%. The issue we don't know yet is we have a very good database that we developed on the developmental disability side. We don't have that database fully developed on the senior side. So by the time we add all that data in, I'm not quite sure where we're going to be, where we're going to be at. But I think dropping it would be appropriate. And again, I think we'd recommend 5% as a benchmark for next biennium.
We appreciate the fact that there's zero tolerance, and we feel the same way. But we're talking about, you know, a business model that you can use for to try and work toward. Are there comments about the possibility of reducing it from its current level by 1%? Does that sound like a reasonable thing to do at this point, and then we reevaluate it?
We all know we believe it's zero. Yeah. But yeah.
All right. So, okay.
Mr. Chair, we will make that change on the performance measurement chart to
5%. Thank you.
As the target.
Budget note.
There was one budget note included on my memo. The Department of Human Services, Seniors, and People with Disabilities, in collaboration with the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities, shall convene a work group to review institutional, residential, foster care, waiver, and family support programs that serve children aged birth to 18 with disabilities. The work group shall review eligibility, demographics, funding options, program design, administration, implementation, and best practice. The work group will report to the appropriate interim committee early in 2006 with their findings and recommendations for implementation of a comprehensive, integrated system of services and supports for children with disabilities and their families, including a broad range of options to prevent out-of-home placement whenever possible.
Comments or thoughts on this budget note? Sound like a reasonable thing.
I like it. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's a good budget note. I think that we need to work in this direction. I have to also just inform those that have concerns about other budget notes that this is a very fluid process, and the House, as of last night, had plans of also including a budget note dealing with cost of living and adjustments and assuring that they would go to the providers. That has been approved by the House. It has not been approved by the Senate, and therefore at this time it is not going to be included after all, but will be a source of continuing discussion in the hours, days, and weeks ahead. So, without further discussion on budget notes, then are we prepared for that?
Mr. Chair, if you'll allow us about a 2 or 3 minute recess while we get things ready for the preliminary. But to summarize it, what we want to do is hand out a document that shows all the preliminary budgets that you've approved, and make sure we've got all the budget notes. There was one that was we did not discuss with respect to health services yesterday that has been approved by both Senator Schrader and Representative Scott. So if you give us a few minutes, we will get right on it.
Okay, before we do that, I just want to check with the committee. Is there anyone here who would like to vote against what we've gone over today but would vote in favor of the total bill? Because what we're about to do is just not take a vote on this cluster and have a vote on the total bill itself. if it's not going to change anybody's vote, then we'll do it that way. And if somebody wants to make a, you know, a statement that I don't like what we've done over here today for one thing, but I'm not going to vote against the entire bill, then we can do that. Not hearing anything, then we will stand in recess for a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Work session on House Bill 5148, Seniors and People with Disabilities.
Mr. Chair, we have a few things to do. We're not proposing any changes to the preliminary budgets that you have seen already. We have a couple of additional budget notes, and Sheila Baker will be here to hand out all of this material. We're in the process of finishing copying them. There are two additional budget notes that the subcommittee has not yet seen on the pages that we've just handed out. One is for the department-wide support services. It's for the whole department. A budget note, the first one, Department of Human Services is directed to work with the State Commission on Children and Families through the Senate Bill 555 Partners for Children and Families Work Group to review and make recommendations for increased community-based delivery of services. This work should focus on early childhood and self-sufficiency, mental health, public health, alcohol, and drug prevention and treatment services for children and families. DHS and the Commission are to report to the Emergency Board no later than July 2006 on this work and the findings and recommendations. This one has been approved by both co-chairs.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Briefly.
Remember I said yes to you, so I can do the same thing. I can write the direct Department of Human Services to be sure that they include the local communities. Would you prefer to do that?
Fine.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll speed ahead. Under health services, you have not seen this budget note. All the others, I might add, that you already have and have approved them. The one on the second page related to health services, the department shall review the potential of securing additional savings in the medical assistance program by the use of brand or legend drugs that may ultimately prove to be of a lesser cost than generics. The department is encouraged to review factors associated with the identification of total drug costs, including all discounts and rebates. The department is encouraged to work with interested parties to identify potential cost savings in this area, as well as potential administrative problems associated with the use and reimbursement of such drugs.
Any questions on either of these two additional budget notes? Are they okay?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I like this, but who are they going to review and report to? There's nothing. There's no action, Mr. Britton. We need to have an action out of this. The second one, they're going to review it. So what are they going to review? You got to report to someone or give us your report.
Well, I think we can ask the department to report on that if you wish. I'd rather not be changing the budget note because then we'll need further approvals. But
okay, well, let me clarify. I'd
certainly do that.
I had a work group with representatives of pharmacies, pharmacists, and pharmaceutical companies about the occasional situation where a generic, where a brand drug ends its patent, and then for a period of 6 months or more or so after that time, the first generic that was prepared has exclusive rights, and sometimes the cost for that is more than the brand drug. And so the statute presently says that if there is a generic drug, you have to use it. And so the goal was to determine whether or not there may be times when we could save money by using a brand drug instead of the generic drug, and we were unable to get an agreement in the short amount of time that we had available, and so this budget note came forward to have this be able to be reviewed, because it not only are we trying to save money, but it also has to be something that can be dealt with by the agency and by the pharmacists, because they're the ones that have to implement. And so there will be inherent follow-up with this.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett and John, clarify for me, but wouldn't it be true if there were savings that were generated as a result of this, that we would expect them to show up in a departmental rebalance, that they would come back and talk about it at that point?
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, with budget notes.
We also have Let's see. We will. Yep. Get that. What we just passed out is a summary budget tracker. All the numbers that are on here.
Okay. Only one thing.
You have seen, except for one, which is the capital improvements portion of the DHS budget. This is down toward the bottom of the sheet, the $1,163,318. We are not recommending any changes to this amount. This is for the Oregon State Hospital, the Eastern Oregon Training Center, and the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center to, if necessary, and very necessary, to make some improvements there to keep things operative. So that will be included in the budget with your approval.
All right, that's fine.
These represent all the preliminary budgets that we've reviewed over the last 4 days.
Okay.
Finally, we are handing out a conceptual amendment. Section 1 shows you the general fund portions that are on the summary spreadsheet. Section 2 shows you the amounts associated with other funds. And I would note in the text portion of Section 2, including federal funds, although these are other funds, when the department receives these from other agencies, for example, the Child Care Development Fund is in here, Women's Infants and Children's Nutritional Program Food Rebates. These are technically other funds for the purposes of budgeting, but we are noting the fact that they include some federal funds for that have come to the department and spent as other funds.
Okay.
Section 3 is the lottery allocation that is for gambling addiction, the $9,312,000 that we saw yesterday. Section 4 are federal fund, limited federal funds. Section 5 clarifies that the Department of Human Services expenditures for women, infants, and children's nutritional program food vouchers and federal food stamp benefit payments are non-limited. Section 6 shows the amount of tobacco settlement funds that are in the health services budget cluster, the $24.5 million. Section 7 is a $2.5 million allocation or an appropriation to the emergency board for a special purpose appropriation that would go, well, allocated, that could be allocated to the Department of Human Services for child welfare staffing and legal representation. But again, this would be under the control of the emergency board. And Section 8 is the emergency clause. So.
Mr. Chair.
President Hanna.
Mr. Britton, where's the 2-5 on the spreadsheet show?
Sheila, could you respond to that one?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna. If you look at the black bordered box toward the bottom, after the Department of Human Services budget totals, there's a line that says special purpose appropriations to the emergency board. There's for child welfare staffing and legal representation, and there's the $2.5 million.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So the $2.5 is not included in the total budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, technically, no, it is not included in the Department of Human Services budget, but it is because of the special purpose appropriation, we can include it in their budget bill.
Thank you.
Other questions on the presentation? Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Why, I must have missed it. Section 1, number 1, why is that not $123 million? It's $119 million.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, department-wide support services budget includes the number on line 1, the 119. It also includes the debt service number on line 6, the 4.880033. So those two numbers together should add up to the $123 million.
Thank you. She's on her toes. Babe, Chair would accept a motion
to adopt
the conceptual amendments. Mr. Hanna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd make a motion that the committee accept the amendments as provided.
Representative Hanna moves that the conceptual amendments to House Bill 5148 be adopted. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there objection to the motion to adopt the conceptual amendments? Without objection, they're accepted. Now the chair would accept the motion to move House Bill 5148 as amended at full House Special Committee on Budget.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would recommend House Bill 5148 be passed to the full committee on budget of the House with a due pass recommendation.
President Hanna moves House Bill 5148 as amended to the full House Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Representative Hanna. Henson.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be voting against the motion. There's a lot of significantly good things that have been put into this budget. I can certainly see it as a work in progress that is moving forward. But the deficiencies in terms of adult dental and the health plan, the general assistance program that I've been railing about for a day or two, I think there still needs to be people saying this still needs to have work. It still needs to be. And considering that we don't even have a clear pattern of how the budget flow is going to be, how we're going to match up with the Senate work that's being done in these same areas, I think it's appropriate for me to be voting no at this time to say that there still needs to be things that need to have some work done on.
Okay. So noted. Is there further discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Hanna?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Richardson?
Aye. House Bill 5148, having received the majority, is moved to the Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 5148. Is there any other matters that need to come up before the committee before we adjourn?
We will need a carrier for the bill.
Okay, I will carry the bill. And we have a floor session that is in the courtesies right now. So without further comment, we will adjourn. Thank you all. Mm-hmm.